the greatest games lineup in history!
Welcome to episode 330 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pauly.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Hello, Josh.
Hello, Richard. How was your long weekend?
My long weekend was not long enough because I worked yesterday.
Boo.
No, but it all came to a culmination today with a great presentation, and do you see what I'm holding up?
That looks like a watch.
It is. It's a watch with a dancing Mickey Mouse on it and a little Apple logo.
Boo.
Not boo. This is awesome.
I guess.
That's the last we're going to talk about that.
All right. So let's move into interesting things, unlike an Apple Watch.
Hey, like now.
Listener feedback. If you want to send us some of your feedback, you can send us an email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
And the first message came from Mike Fauché. You may remember we spoke about his post in our last episode, talking about his move from Media Center to Plex to manage his movie library. And he says, I heard the show and the comment about the 10-foot experience. Josh is correct. Their home theater app is designed for the 10-foot experience with a pretty nice UI. It fully supports the Harmony remote by using commands from Media Center. I'm using the Harmony One, Touch, and Hub from two home theater PCs with no issues. The only thing I did not mention is you have to create an auto start task in Windows only through the task scheduler, not through the startup group, to start the Plex app when you reboot. The server auto starts, but the home theater app does not. It's an easy fix, but it needs to be mentioned. It was a great show, and thanks for the mention. Mike.
Cool. Good tip on the on how to get that app started. That's something we take for granted, being Media Center users. It's just an option in the app settings. So a good thing to know if you're going to switch over to using Plex's home theater app.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. We also got an email from Richard, or sorry, from James. You're Richard. He's not Richard. He says, hi, Josh and Richard. Insert standard preamble here about loving the show. All right. He says, I'm not sure if you remember, but it was me, he's taking credit here, that originally suggested that Josh used Plex through his Xbox One. I suggested that Richard did the underground tour in Seattle. So don't feel too hard done by that.
Yeah, so that was actually a really good suggestion.
All right. He says, I've been listening with interest over the last few months, and it seems that Josh has become a Plex convert. You know, actually, I'm gonna break into this just slightly here. I was thinking about this email this morning, and probably before this weekend, I would have thought, I'm not sure I would call me a Plex convert. I don't really use it that much. And then yesterday, all in one day, I used Plex on my Xbox One, my Surface, my main desktop PC, and my Windows phone, all in one day. I guess that makes me a Plex convert.
I think you're just steps away from becoming a Plex fanboy.
I'm not going to go that far. All right, back to James's email. He says, from the initial skepticism and dislike to actively recommending it, I guess that configuration works in a slightly different way to Media Center. But it works for me, and I guess it now also works for Josh. James wanted to then go on and point out some specifics around if you're going to build a Plex server, what you might want for hardware in response to other emails that we've gotten recently. And he links us to an article on the Plex support site that's titled, What Kind of CPU Do I Need for My Server Computer? And it sounds like CPU matters a lot, which makes total sense, because what we've talked about in the past was it all comes down to how powerful and how quickly can it handle transcoding. And they recommend looking at different scores from an application called Passmark. And, you know, they recommend for a 1080p 10 megabit per second video, you're going, if you want to transcode that as quickly as possible, then you're going to need a CPU with a Passmark score of 2000. If you want to do 720p at 4 megs per second, that's going to require a Passmark score of 1500. You might not be super familiar with those. Maybe you're not a super hardware guru. That certainly describes me. I have no idea what my CPU's Passmark score is. But there's another site that James linked to called cpubenchmark.net. Don't worry, these links will be in the show notes. If you're driving in your car or something right now, you can come back and get this information later. And then for reference, he told us how he went from using an old micro server to building a new server built on a refurbished Packard Bell that has a Core i5 4460 in it. When he ran Passmark on these two machines, the micro server got a score of 809. That Ouch. Doesn't even meet the 720p numbers.
Ouch, that's probably what I'm running.
And then his new Packard Bell, which he didn't spend very much money on, got a Core i5, got a Passmark score of 6,672. So he's having absolutely zero issues with his new server. He's running Plex on Roku and Windows Phone and a couple of LG TVs and an Android and iOS devices. He's running it on everything. And he says it's playing like a dream. He says, I hope this helps someone when choosing what to run a Plex server on. You can run it on older, low-powered hardware or newer hardware, but using the CPU Passmark is a really easy tool to decide what your hardware should look like. So awesome, awesome tip there from James. Thank you for passing that on to us and all of the rest of the listeners.
Yeah, very cool. Now I'm really worried about trying to run it on my Drobo.
I doubt you're going to be able to get Passmark scores for your Drobo.
One never knows. All right. Well, the next message is from Ron, and Ron says, thanks for always putting together a great and informative show. I uploaded some music albums to the music folder on OneDrive, since OneDrive and the music app on Windows Phone 8.1 now talk to each other. You can stream or download songs or albums to your phone from the music folder or OneDrive using the music app. My problem is if you downloaded them, you cannot delete them off your phone using the music app without deleting them also off OneDrive. It warns you about this. If you try to delete a song or album, the files are stored in an Xbox Music cache folder on the phone with no recognizable names. I'm running out of space on my phone, and I'd like to download some different songs, but I don't want to have to delete the songs on OneDrive. I could re-upload the songs to OneDrive after they delete, but come on, Microsoft. Why can't we delete on the phone and leave them on the cloud? Wow.
Yeah, I had no idea that that's how this worked. I've done a lot of streaming from OneDrive on my devices, but I hadn't downloaded much. So just as a sanity check, I was able to reproduce exactly what Ron is talking about here. I downloaded one track and went to delete it. And sure enough, it says, if you do this, you're going to delete it from OneDrive. And this is absolutely ridiculous. This is not an issue that should exist.
I would call that a design flaw.
You know, what I wonder is when the developer, parenthesis, because it might only be one person, working on this app at Microsoft, when they went to implement this, if they said, well, if we make it delete everything, we can get this feature out now. Or if you want it to not delete everything in both places, it's going to take some time. And they said, well, let's make it delete in both places, but warn the user and we'll come back later and fix this. This is me guessing. I don't know. I don't have any inside information. I tried to get information. I reached out to the people that I know of that are working on this app, and I have not heard back yet. So hopefully this is something that they're going to address soon, but I don't know for sure. And Ron, I tried to think of other solutions for you too, and I don't think there are any. I think you're going to have to delete the songs on your phone. have it wipe it out in OneDrive and re-upload them. As dumb as that is, I think you're stuck with that workaround hack. I'm not even sure what to call that. It's certainly not a solution.
One thing I would do is I would definitely report this to Microsoft if you haven't already. Provide this as a feedback item so that they know that more people are getting bugged by this, because this seems like a really, really bad thing that they're going to need to fix in an iteration.
Right, because it's not a bug. It's just...
it's a design flaw. I mean, this is just a poor design choice.
Right.
Even iTunes works better than that.
Right. And they clearly know about it, or else they wouldn't be giving you the warning message. But it would be good for us to let them know that this isn't acceptable. This needs to change.
Right.
All right. One last email. This is from Sanford. He said, I was wondering if you've had a chance to give Open Source Media Center a whirl. Although it is a Linux program, it is based upon Kodi. What I don't know is where their guide data comes from. So I did a little research into Open Source Media Center for Sanford, and because it wasn't one that I was sure if I had ever even looked at before. I didn't install it or anything, but I did some poking around to find out more about it. Like Sanford said, it's based on Kodi. So what is Open Source Media Center? All it really is a distribution of Debian Linux that includes Kodi. It is just Kodi. It's not anything, at least not that I can tell, anything extra special baked into Kodi. It's just an easier way to install Kodi onto things. It's just, here's your Linux distribution, put this on a USB thing, install it, bang, you've got a working home theater PC that's built on Kodi. So that's what it is. And it's not, you know, I'm not all that interested in spending a whole lot of time with Kodi, so probably won't be checking out Open Source Media Center. In response to his guide data question, Kodi doesn't natively have PVR support in it. It uses other sources to be able to get guide data and schedule recordings and things like that. So if you look at the Kodi FAQ, it talks about using other home theater PC software as a back end for doing the PVR functionality. And they mentioned Media Portal, Myth TV, Next PVR, TV Headend, VDR, which I don't think I've ever even heard of VDR before, and good old Windows Media Center. So you could use Windows Media Center and Open Source Media Center if you were looking for a lightweight, low powered front end box that you could, I mean, you can run Open Source Media Center on a Raspberry Pi. So if you want to stick that out someplace and have it getting its recordings and stuff from Media Center, then that should work. But when I've tried messing with some of these Media Center as a back-end sort of solutions, I've not had a lot of luck, because more than just Kodi offers this type of solution. So let me know how it works out for you, but I'm just going to stick with regular Windows Media Center.
Yeah, he unfortunately lost me at Linux.
Linux is fine, but it's just not, you know, the article for the homepage for Open Source Media Center says, yes, it runs on Linux, but you don't need to worry about that. You won't even have to mess around with Linux, because it just goes straight to Kodi. The problem is that eventually things will happen, and eventually you're going to need to get into the Linux backend, and I can probably handle that. You know, I've done some Linux administration in the past, but if I'm out of town and my media center breaks and it's Linux based, my wife will murder me when I get back, because she's not going to figure out how to run a Linux box. Why should she? She's not a IT admin. So no, I don't really like these Linux solutions all that well, because eventually things do go wrong. And most people know how to handle basic troubleshooting on a Windows box, but God help you with a Linux machine.
All right, well, why don't we dive into our topics and, as usual, start with some video.
All right, so last week, and frankly, it seems like a lot of weeks recently, we've been talking about the over-the-air TV tuner for the Xbox One. Well, in between the time when we recorded the episode last week and when we published it, Xbox, instead of just saying, hey, go and buy this Hop Hog TV tuner if you live in the US and Canada, They've made their own Xbox One TV tuner and a corresponding bundle to go along with it. What is their TV tuner? It's the Hop-Hog tuner that we've been talking about for the last few weeks. It even says Hop-Hog on it, but they're just calling it the Xbox One TV tuner. You can get it on its own from Amazon and the Microsoft Store for $60. Or the more interesting option is their bundle, because you can get the tuner bundled with a Mohu Leaf 50, which is an amplified, nice over-the-air antenna. It's the one that I've got for my trials of all of this stuff. You can get both of them bundled together for $99, which saves you about $30 on buying both of them together. And the Mohu Leaf is a great antenna. Mohu makes really, really good antennas. So if you're new to over-the-air, if you're looking to get into, if you're looking to cut the cord and make the jump from cable to over-the-air, and you don't already have an antenna, and you're thinking of doing this on an Xbox One anyway, this is a great option for you. If you're not so sure about the Xbox One, I haven't actually tried this yet, but I don't see any reason why this TV tuner wouldn't work with Windows Media Center. It's an old tuner. It's not like this is a brand new tuner. It's been out for a few years, so I'm sure it works with Media Center and probably everything else that supports over-the-air TV tuners.
Assuming you can get drivers that are going to work with it. I mean, I wonder if there's anything in it that's slightly different that might make it hard to operate on Windows.
Yeah, we don't know for sure, but I would be really, really surprised if there was anything like that going on with this device.
Yeah. Now, you and I talked about this a little bit after this news broke, and you seemed a little bit perplexed by it. I guess from the perspective of why, like, why would they even bother putting their own brand on this instead of just keeping it as the Hop-Hog tuner? And I actually thought it was a pretty good idea, because I think that the number of people who know Hop-Hog is a whole lot smaller than the number of people who know Xbox. And if someone goes in the store asking for the tuner for Xbox, they're probably not going to remember the name Hop-Hog.
Or
let
be
alone
able to
pronounce it.
Right. You know, I don't think that my confusion and bewilderment around all of this is so much that they rebranded it. I think more of it has to do with the timing. Like, why didn't they just tell us a month ago that they were going to have their own tuner? But if you wanted to beta test this early, you could use this one. And maybe at that time, tell us that they're the same device. Maybe not. I don't know. It just seemed weird. And it's really only an issue for the time being, because in 6 months, no one's going to remember that, oh yeah, to beta test this, you had to use the straight up Hop-Hog version of this. And now you can just go to a Microsoft store and buy the Microsoft branded one. No one will remember any of that. So it doesn't really matter, but it did seem a little odd to me at first.
Now, if someone does get one of these, you created a how-to video for getting this thing set up.
Yeah, it's not tremendously difficult. And I can't remember if we talked about this a couple weeks ago and I did this video, but it's not as immediately obvious to a regular Windows user how to walk through this, because with USB hardware, I'm used to opening it up, plugging it into a USB port, and it's saying, hey, we need drivers. Let's go get the drivers. Installs them and then walks you through the rest of the process. That isn't what happens with the Xbox One. You attach the TV tuner later in the process. It's not hard, but there are a couple of things that might catch you out. So I went through the whole process and made a video of how to get this all set up if you're in the US or Canada using this tuner. So that link is on the website and it's hosted out on YouTube. So check that out if you're wondering how to get this going on an Xbox One. It's a pretty short process. It's only going to take you a few minutes. The longest part of the process really is the channel scan. You know, the channel scan could take 5 or 10 minutes, depending on what you've got going on in your area. So the rest of it is fairly straightforward. It's just a matter of getting started at the right point and making sure that your One Guide settings are configured properly. And I also, in my video, go through and take it to the next step and show you how to use this tuner in addition to a separate HDMI, a separate device plugged into your HDMI input so that you can use both of them. I've still got the tuner hooked up on my Xbox One, and I've still got my Media Center PC running through the HDMI input. I don't use the tuner all that often, but I will mention a nice usage of it later in the show.
All right, very good. So that's it for video news. Now let's jump into audio. And we have a couple things going on with Xbox Music from a new contributor.
Yeah, I think listeners of this show especially are going to recognize this name. This newest contributor to the DMZ, his name is Marcus Lyons. That should sound super familiar because he was just on Entertainment 2.0 as our guest two episodes ago? Three episodes ago? I don't know.
Three. It was one that I missed.
Okay, sure. You remember your schedule a lot better than I do. It was recent.
I think it was, yeah, I think you put it in the episode when I was in New York. So
that sounds right. So yeah, Marcus joined me a couple weeks ago to talk about cord cutting using the Xbox One. And it was a great interview with him. He did an awesome job. And he's also a Microsoft MVP for Xbox. This guy loves him some Xbox Music, loves music in general, but he knows more about Xbox Music than anyone else I know. And so he wrote up an article for us called Xbox Music 101, a service overview. And believe it or not, despite the fact that I've used Xbox Music a lot, I even learned a few things from this post. So if you don't know anything at all, or even if you know, if you think you know everything about Xbox Music, there might still be some tidbits in here for you to learn about what's actually a pretty full-featured app and service. So we'll just quickly hit at some of the high points here. So obviously Xbox Music is also an app. It's on Windows 8, it's on Windows 10, it's on Windows phones, and it's on iOS and Android. But it's an app. And you know, one of the first things that I learned is, you know, of course it plays MP3s, and of course it plays WMAs because it's a Microsoft app. But what I didn't realize is that it also plays AAC files. It makes total sense, but I didn't actually know that because I'm not an iTunes guy, so I don't have a bunch of old AAC files laying around. Because isn't that what iTunes used to use?
Old AAC files.
Well, even never iTunes mind. Uses MP3s now, right?
No.
Really?
No.
No.
No. Right. iTunes, it's still based on MP4 audio. And actually, I'm finding more and more services starting to offer MP4 audio. I think that's even the standard option now from downloads that you get on Audible.
Interesting. All right. Well, now you know that if you're getting those files, you can play them on Xbox Music. It's, of course, also a marketplace where you can buy music that you want to buy. And it's a pretty full-featured marketplace. It's probably not as big as iTunes, may not be as big as Amazon, but for the vast majority of people, I think you're going to find most of what you want. The only time that I can't find things that I want is when I'm looking for somewhat obscure-ish electronic music, which is a lot more popular in Europe. So Microsoft's a more American company. That's what I blame it on. I hope that eventually changes, but I haven't seen them adding the labels that I care a lot about yet. He also goes on to point out that there are deals every single week with Xbox Music. We mentioned these a lot last December when they were having crazy deals like albums for 99 cents. But they do have deals that happen every single week, like $6.99 albums, usually brand new albums for $6.99, and then a couple of other deals every single week. And if you want those, check out the Music Deals app. It's a separate app, unfortunately. I wish it was just a section inside of Xbox Music, but it's not. He hits on the Cloud Locker, which we mentioned earlier, being able to store all of your music up on OneDrive and playing it for free on your phone or your Windows device, whatever. The one thing I learned here, there is a limit. You can't just store 11 billion files up there. There's a limit of 50,000 songs, apparently. I did not know that. That seems like a lot, though. I'm not really sure how many songs I have, but I'm sure it's nowhere near 50,000. He also hit on the radio feature of the Xbox Music app. This is one that I don't really have any experience with either. And unfortunately, when I went to check it out, I also discovered that it requires an Xbox Music Pass subscription. So I'm going to have to take his word for it that it's a nice service. You know, it's a typical sort of discovery feature where you put in an artist that you like, and then it gives you essentially like a radio station of other songs that you might like similar to that artist.
Seems odd that that requires a subscription, since most of the competing services, that's their free offering.
Yeah, but to be able to listen to any of that stuff on, especially on a mobile device, well, on anything now, you have to have a subscription. Without a subscription, you can only listen to your content. So, you know, when I took a step back to think about it, it does kind of make sense. It's maybe disappointing because of some of their competitors, but I do understand why it works that way. A little bit of a teaser. The next tip here is that it's also a subscription service. We really like Xbox Music as a subscription service. If the store has everything that you want, then pay $10 a month or $100 for a year. Get access to everything on all of your devices. You can download the tracks for offline playback. You can use the radio feature. I really like Xbox Music Pass. It just doesn't have everything that I want. But, you know, I've almost subscribed to it just so that I could use it on my Xbox One. But again, it's missing a few key record labels for me. And then the other one, which I actually mentioned a little bit earlier, is that it's a cross-platform solution. They don't just have apps on Windows. There's Xbox Music apps on iOS and Android also. Now, they're not quite as full-featured as the ones on Windows, but they're getting there. They're getting better by the day. So Xbox Music 101, awesome deep dive into what Xbox Music has to offer from new guy to the DMZ, Marcus Lyons.
Very cool. But that's not it, is it?
It's not it. So we mentioned that the iOS and Android apps for Xbox Music don't have all of the features of the Windows version. One of the key features that they don't currently have is the ability to play music from your OneDrive collection, which I think is one of the best features in the whole app. Well, today, Microsoft announced that feature is coming to both iOS and Android. They're not giving a specific date, but they did say it's coming in late June or July in beta form. So it sounds like, you know, it's only a month and a half-ish to 2 months away. And if you're not on Windows Phone, you're still going to have that awesome option of playing back all of your content off of OneDrive. This is like, I've been thinking about this feature a lot because my father-in-law just recently purchased a new computer, and he likes technology, but he's not as crazy into it as like you and I are. But he knows about the cloud. He's got a huge music library. He uploaded it all to Amazon a few years ago. He primarily plays it back off of his Kindle, and then he got an iPhone, so I think he can play it back off of his iPhone. So he just got this new computer, and he decided, he really wanted Office, so he looked around at the options and decided this Office 365 subscription sounds like a great deal for us. So he signed up for that, and I told him, you know, with that, you get practically unlimited OneDrive storage, and you could put your entire music library, which is gigantic compared to mine, up on OneDrive. And I said, but the only real downside to that is that your iPhone can't play it right now. But I think they're eventually going to do that. And well, now I can tell them, hey, you're now going to be able to play all of your music on your iPhone because they're bringing this to that feature. So I think that's really great for the cross-platform people out there, like you, Richard.
Yeah, I am definitely one of those, but I don't have the subscription service. Is this something I can use without a subscription?
Absolutely. The OneDrive playback of your music does not require a subscription. It is completely free. You have to have enough storage on OneDrive to cover your music collection. You know, if you've only got 10 gigs of free storage and you've got a 50 gig music collection, you're going to need to pay for some more OneDrive storage. But if you've got the OneDrive storage to cover your collection, you can play it for free. and download to your devices for free from OneDrive.
50 gigs of music.
Some people might have 50 gigs.
What kind of lame music collector do you think I am? That's nothing.
How much do you have?
I have at least 80 gig of music.
Wow. Well, then I have nothing compared to you. I think mine's under 20.
And I will put an asterisk on that. And that is not from the Napster days. That's purchased music that I've ripped or downloaded.
Good. Good to hear. All right. Well, one more audio story here. And this is an interesting one from Windows 10.
This is a head scratcher for me.
It's a little unique. So obviously in Windows 10, Microsoft is introducing a new web browser, and it's called Microsoft Edge. And it will be the first and only browser to support, at least for the time being, to support a new audio format from Dolby called Dolby Digital Plus. They're calling this Enhanced AC3. Why do you care? Well, because it's multi-channel audio in your web browser. That's up to 7.1 audio in your web browser.
Right. Why do you care?
Netflix?
Okay. On a home theater PC,
sure,
which it seems they're backing away from, so I don't get it. I just don't get this. I don't understand what the use case is. Now, one thing that they talk about is a new Dolby Digital portable mode, which is going to adjust the dynamic range so that the audio is optimized for the speakers that might be built into a laptop or listening over headphones or something like that. And that makes sense. But otherwise, support for 7.1 sound? These are file formats that are, or these are audio formats that are used with MP4s and M2TS files. Why? This just seems so backwards from the other direction that they seem to be going with Windows.
Well, not so much, because they're getting away from things like Media Center, because the whole industry is going towards streaming, and this is built for streaming technologies. Like, you know, one of the things that I didn't mention here is this is 7.1 audio in a web browser, and you don't need a plugin. This all works in HTML5.
Right.
So Netflix or Amazon or whoever wants to implement this can do their crazy 4K video and 7.1 audio, and if they want to, use DRM also, all in a web browser, no plugins required. And maybe not as many people, obviously not as many people have their PCs that they're watching streaming video through a browser on connected to a super nice 7.1 setup at home. But some of them do, and some of them, maybe a slightly larger number of them, maybe have surround sound speakers hooked up to their primary computer in their office, where 7.1 might come in handy.
7.1? I don't know. I don't know that I buy it.
Well, maybe not 7.1 is not going to be as common, obviously, but 5.1 for sure. And if you've got 5.1, why not 7.1?
So here's what I think is an awesome use case for this. Make this work with Play 2 so that you can play your audio out to a Sonos home theater system and watch in, you know, let's say whatever room happens to have that, but actually watching it on your PC if you want to be doing that, which for some reason people do. I don't understand that, but that might be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's theoretically possible. Theoretically.
All right. Well, let's see what happens when that comes out. I'll be eager to test it out. I still haven't had a chance to play with Edge yet. Have you?
I've played with Project Spartan. Like, even in the latest Windows 10 build, they're still just calling it Project Spartan, even though it's okay. Edge. So, yeah. All right. Let's move on to a little bit of gaming news. Not a ton here because E3 is coming up soon. Although not as soon as it seemed like. It seems like by the time we hit Memorial Day, that E3 should be right around the corner, like next week. And it's not. It's not until June 15th. So June 15th is when Microsoft will be presenting their Xbox press conference at E3. What's E3? If you're a gamer, you know what E3 is, but maybe you're new to this. E3 is the CES of the video game world. It is the biggest trade conference for the video game world. It's huge. It is where all the major announcements happen. So major that Microsoft is saying, come see our press briefing and see the greatest games lineup of Xbox history. Sure. Okay. So when can you do that? You can do that Monday, June 15th. Their press conference starts at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Where can you watch it? Are they like Apple, where you can only watch it on Apple devices? No, it's all over the place. You can watch it on Xbox.com. They've got these apps called Xbox Live Events Player that are on Xbox 360, Xbox One, and Windows Phone. And say you don't have a web browser, say you don't have an Xbox or a phone. Do you have cable TV? I bet you do, because it'll also be on Spike TV. So lots of options for watching the greatest games lineup in Xbox history event.
You need to have that game voice on, or the WW something voice. The greatest games lineup in history.
Exactly that. Coming soon. So that's why there's not a lot of gaming news right now. There is a little tiny bit of news, especially if you're on Windows 10. They've updated the Xbox app on Windows 10. And if you're using Smart Glass, this isn't going to sound like a huge update. They're basically moving a bunch of the recent Smart Glass features into this Xbox app, which will essentially be replacing Smart Glass. So you can edit your avatars. You can see what your friends are doing. You can get access straight to the game hubs so that you can check out, you know, details about which friends of yours are playing the games and, you know, things like that. Access to the game DVR, which I'm pretty sure we already had. Also the ability to turn your Xbox on and off right from the app, which I love. And then the one feature of this update that got everyone really excited for nothing was streaming support, except that it's not actually game streaming support. It's the ability to test game streaming, but not by, I don't know, streaming a game. Instead, they've theoretically put a button inside of this app that if your Xbox One is updated, presumably on the preview version, but I don't really know for sure, that inside of this app, you should get a button that says test streaming, and it will anonymously collect some information about your PC and your network and send that off to Microsoft so that they can get that whole game streaming scenario working well for the biggest number of people, I suppose. But I don't know, because I couldn't find it. I went and read a few articles, played with this app on my Surface Pro, made sure that my Xbox One is updated on the latest preview build. This button does not exist for me. So I might be the most excited person in the universe about game streaming from the Xbox One. I may be the only person in the universe excited about game streaming from the Xbox One.
Oh, I doubt that.
And I can't test this. So that's all coming. They also mentioned that the Xbox One is getting the digital TV tuner in 11 new European countries like Austria, Belgium, Denmark, Finland, Ireland, Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Sweden, and Switzerland, and coming to even more soon. Also, like we mentioned earlier, available in the US and Canada. And again, for some reason, they mention the wireless display app, which we've mentioned previously also, which is the Miracast app for your Xbox One so that you can wirelessly display from your mobile device to your TV through the Xbox One. So all of that available now on the Xbox One and the Xbox app on Windows 10.
Very cool. Josh, you know, that list of countries you rattled off was almost melodic. Like you're singing a song, you're in such a good mood. So while you're in such a good mood, tell us what you think about the latest build of Windows 10 on mobile.
You had to wreck it for me, didn't you? Things are going so well, and then you have to bring me back to Windows 10 on a touch device. Richard, back in January or whenever I first started complaining about this, I thought, things couldn't possibly get worse.
Like, they have to get better, right?
They have to get better. You would think. We're at the bottom here. It's only up from here. Unfortunately, that is not the case. We've hit a new low. I installed this build last week, and I looked over at my wife, Jen, and said, Jen, I'm pretty certain Microsoft is trolling me here. It's me. They have to be trolling me. This is so bad. So put it on my Surface Pro, put it into tablet mode. I don't even have a keyboard on it when I'm trying this out. Full screen start menu. And instead of getting like this full screen of tiles, I get like a third of the screen width of tiles with giant margins on each side because it's centered with nothing in the margins. And it scrolls vertically on my landscape 16x9 orientation tablet. This is stupid. And then on top of that, and I don't think I've mentioned this in the podcast, they've, in this latest release, they've changed how you get to all apps from the full screen start menu. So new start screen, full screen, you get this stupid little mini column in the middle of your tiles. And then how do you get to all apps? You click a freaking hamburger menu in the top left-hand corner, which, by the way, not where my hands are. My thumb can't reach up to that corner. It's way up there. My thumbs are down here holding the tablet, guys.
One
Might
of the biggest complaints
sometime.
Against the hamburger.
Yep. So reach all the way up here to get to the hamburger menu. And then we get this narrow menu that shows like recent apps and stuff. Oh, but it's not in there. I need to get to the rest of the apps. All right, so pull my hand all the way back down to the bottom where there's the menu option for all apps, and then I can scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll. Because why would they include useful features from Windows 8, like being able to sort that list by recently installed or anything like that? None of that is there. None of that. It is awful. They haven't fixed, they haven't made app switching any better on a touch device. It's driving me insane. And all we're doing is getting closer to Windows 10's release, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse. Now, one little thing though, I did see one tweet from Gabe All at Microsoft this over the weekend, where I think he was saying that the like mini column of tiles on the full screen start menu is a bug. And I think that's actually true, because while playing with it a little bit more of the weekend, when I was rotating the screen and did some other things, then it eventually filled it up. I think it still made me scroll vertically, which is dumb, but it, for the most part, you just get the tiny little like three columns of tiles in the middle of the screen. And it's driving me nuts.
Can tell you that you're not alone. So it's not just you that they're attacking here, because I've heard the cries of many people complaining about the new start experience on Windows. And you wonder why I don't put this on my ThinkPad tablet.
Well, how often do you use your ThinkPad tablet?
A couple times a week.
You could put up with it a couple times a week to try out the newest stuff.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Once it's there, it ruins it forever.
You can go back to 8.1.
I just don't trust that. I don't trust that I'm going to be able to restore that to a state that I'm happy with.
Well, that's a risk, I suppose.
Yeah, this is very frustrating. And it sounds to me like they're waffling on some things. It sounds to me like they made some changes to make Start better from the last time that you went on a rant about it. And then this latest release comes out and adds a whole bunch of stuff that kind of makes it terrible again.
Well, and I think they're just trying to try as many things as they can. But here's an idea. Instead of just throwing a bunch of garbage against the wall and hoping that something sticks, all those really, really smart people that you had sit down in a lab and focus groups and all this stuff to figure out, what's the best way to use a tablet? Get those people back in the room. They know. Talk to them. Get them back. It was good in 8.1. It was good in 8. On tablets. I just want my tablet experience back. I don't mind the like little start menu thing in desktop mode. It's fine. I don't care. But in full screen start menu, I want my tablet experience back. It won't make desktop users angry. It's okay. It's just for us. It's just for us tablet people. It's okay.
No, but it has to be similar. It has to be.
No, it doesn't.
One Windows.
No.
Yeah.
This is why I haven't talked about Windows 10 the last couple of episodes, because I didn't want to do this.
Why not? It's fun, Josh. Usually I'm the one ranting, so I enjoy getting the opportunity to listen to you rant.
I don't want to whine about the same things every single week, though. I don't want to be that guy.
No, it's new things that suck every week.
That's true. Or at least the same things that suck in new ways every week.
Speaking of which, I hear... No, wait, that's a terrible... No, I'm not going to do that. Okay, so that's it for our Microsoft news. But we do have one industry story, and that is the perhaps not so surprising news that Charter is now planning on buying Time Warner Cable. Does this sound familiar to you in any way, Josh?
Sounds really familiar. Sounds like, wait, Charter? Don't you mean Comcast?
Nope.
No, different. I'm sure you mean Comcast.
Nope, different. Huh. So after the Comcast deal went south, news came out pretty quickly that Charter was courting Time Warner Cable, or vice versa, however that goes. And so it looks like that is now the deal on the table. It looks like Time Warner Cable is accepting the deal, and now here we go again with all the regulators. Although, I don't get the feeling that this one's going to get knocked down. And frankly, I don't have the concerns that I had with the Comcast deal with this one.
Yeah, because Charter's not as big as Comcast. Because Comcast is already, without buying Time Warner Cable, the biggest cable company in the country. And if Time Warner and Charter merge, they're going to have 23.9 million customers, which I think, I don't have the Comcast numbers in front of me, but I think that might still actually be less than Comcast.
Yeah, I think that's true. And the other thing is that Charter isn't into all of the media sectors that Comcast is into. And that's really the thing that bothered me, where Comcast and Universal together, which gave them NBC, so they were in movies, they were in TV, they were in the delivery. It's too much of the pipe. So I think that this makes a lot more sense. I assume that this is good for everybody involved. Full disclosure, I own stock in Time Warner Cable, and today I was a very happy man. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously Time Warner Cable doesn't want, the owners of Time Warner Cable don't want to do this anymore. They want to sell. They don't want to be involved in this business anymore. So eventually something has to give, and they're going to end up being bought out by somebody. And it's not like they're going to get bought by Joe's Pizza Shack. They're going to get bought by another cable company. So it makes sense for it to be a smaller-ish one. So that it's not, you know, giant mega cable corporation. But I mean, it's still going to be big. It'll be number two instead of, you know, way, way, way out in front, number one, like the Comcast Time Warner Cable merger would have been. So I don't know. Like, does this give me warm, fuzzy feelings inside? No, but it doesn't make me as nervous as the Comcast buyout would have.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so that's it for news in this episode, and now's the time where we talk about what is going on in our entertainment centers. So, it's springtime, and I'm doing some spring cleaning. And that doesn't just mean dusting the year's worth of dust that's accumulated around my components in the entertainment center, although that's a good thing to do too, and you should do that. Man, that gets crazy. But I actually went through my scheduled recordings and my season passes and whatever else they're called on your respective DVRs. And I cleaned out things that I don't want to record anymore. And I cleaned out things that don't exist anymore because I noticed that I was going to get a whole bunch of new episodes of Parenthood. Know what? Parenthood is gone. No reason for any episodes to be marked new anymore, but they are. So may make sense as we get out of the spring TV season and into the summer, because we're starting to see some new summer series start up again shortly, it may make sense to give a look through in your recordings and see if there's some stuff that you can clean up too.
Well, and some of the ones that you might want to get rid of are things like, this is especially common in reality shows, like The Amazing Race, and Survivor, where every season it's a different name. So it's never going to record again anyway. So kill it. Kill it with fire. You don't need it anymore. It's not going to record anything. So why even have it in your series list?
It's funny you say that, because I don't have that experience. I am, I hate to say it, but I have to, amazed every time that The Amazing Race does record, because they do change the name, but somehow it's getting picked up. And I don't know if maybe because I did a keyword recording or what, but it is getting picked up properly every season. And I am genuinely surprised by that.
I had not done it as a keyword recording. That makes a lot of sense.
Now, another thing that I've been doing is, I was laughing a little bit as you were talking about the Mohu, because I had a Mohu leaf and I tried it in my attic, and I quickly learned that I'm not close enough to any signal to get anything on a Mohu leaf antenna, even with the amplifier.
You live so really far away.
I live in Annapolis, which is probably equally far from Baltimore and from DC. It's kind of past the 25-mile mark for both cities. So I genuinely want to get over-the-air signals so that I can start using my over-the-air tuner again and free up some of my cable card tuners. And so I've been looking at over-the-air antennas, antennas that can be mounted in the attic, but are in fact the more traditional big wire Hanken antennas. And I don't have a pick yet, but I'd be curious to find out if any of our listeners have specific devices, because I'm looking at a couple, and I have used a Turk antenna in the past that was pretty good. I see that the technology has changed a little bit, and I'd be curious to know if there's something better out there that I should be considering.
Cool. Yeah, I don't have any recommendations for you. I don't live that far away. I like living in the city.
Yeah, that's nice. Now, this morning, you and I both saw some news that the folks at Harmony have finally rolled out the update that they were promising to Harmony Ultimate devices and some of the other Harmony devices to allow for a broader selection of home device control. So currently, Harmony Ultimates can control pretty much anything in your entertainment center, as well as Hue lights and your Nest thermostat and a couple other things. And if you read this press release, you would think that, oh, now they're going to support the Nest thermostat and Hue lights and a couple other things. No, that's not what this is about. They kind of missed the mark on promoting this. In addition to that, it's going to be able to support things like the Peak system that you can get at Best Buy. It's going to support the Lutron system that manages Serena Shades and Caseta devices, and it's going to support Honeywell devices and SmartThings and IFTTT. They have a whole host of integrations that are going to work with your remote that also controls your entertainment center. So that's pretty cool. I wanted to do this upgrade myself, but I didn't have time today. So that's something I plan on doing this week, and hopefully I can report on the success of that, both on the site and on an upcoming episode of Home On. So let's talk about TV and what I'm watching. I'm catching up. I am trying to catch up on series that have ended their seasons, and I just haven't been able to keep up with them. Hawaii 5-0, I had like 5 or 6 episodes to watch. That's a show I enjoy. It's probably the only procedural that I watch. So I got to the season finale of that, and I am up to date on New Girl, which also ended its season. That was pretty fun, and I really like how they almost did a bit of a reset, which is kind of cool. I won't go into details because I don't want to spoil anything, but I really like where they landed. And now I'm working on catching up on Modern Family, and hope to get back into House of Cards so I can finish that up shortly. So I am basically in catch-up mode in preparation for the summer seasons, which are about to start. I just saw that one of my summer shows, Royal Pains, is already on the scheduled recordings list. That's what's going on with me. What are you up to, Josh?
All right. In terms of watching stuff, I'm still only watching Americans season 3. I'm near the end of that. I think I'm in episode 7. I think it's 10-ish episodes. I don't know. It's short. It's not 26 episodes or anything like that. So I'm getting through that. Still loving it. American season 3, way better than House of Cards season 3. I can tell you that. Also, I don't typically talk about what motorsports I've watched, but I watched the Indy 500 this year. I kind of always watch it. But the thing that made it kind of unique this year is, you know, I was home, able to watch it live, watching it in the living room, but we had some people coming over to drop some stuff off, and I needed to be out in the garage for that. So I remembered, hey, I've still got this over-the-ear tuner hooked up to my Xbox, and it does streaming through smart glass, and the Indy 500 is on network TV. So I was able to just bring my Surface out to the garage with me and have the Indy 500 going live on my Surface, streaming from the Xbox, the over-the-air channel, straight into my garage. It was awesome. It was a great way to keep an eye on the race while doing some other stuff. That's pretty much it for TV content. In terms of video games, this is not going to be a surprise to anybody. Almost nothing but Project Cars. I'm absolutely loving this game. It's like it was made for me. I really, really like this game. I've been playing it on my Xbox One, but every time I play on my Xbox One, I love it, but think, man, this would be so much better if I could use my awesome steering wheel that's on my PC, but my PC just doesn't have a good enough graphics card anymore. And then I remembered, oh, wait, what about that giant MacBook Pro that I've got for work that I occasionally game on? I wonder if it would work on there. So tonight I'll be trying out Project Cars on my MacBook Pro. And frankly, if it works well, then I might sell my Xbox One copy so that I can play on PC with my wheel, because playing with a wheel is really, really, really nice when you're playing a simulation game like this. Like, I wouldn't do that for something like Forza Horizon or Need for Speed or something like that. But for a really hardcore, really well done racing simulation like Project Cars, it's worth it. So I'll follow up next week with how that experiment goes and let y'all know. It's also my week to pick a podcast that I really enjoy and share it with all of you. And this week I'm going to go with an educational podcast called The Stuff You Should Know Podcast. And this is a fun podcast. It's from it's a couple of guys who really dig in on a topic, a completely random topic. There's basically nothing that connects the two, you know, one episode to the next. One of them might be on ice cream and the next one might be on hypothermia. Okay, I guess I could see a link between those two. And the next one will be on spiders, male puberty. That was actually a really interesting episode. A lot of just really good in-depth things, and they keep it funny, but you learn a ton in, you know, an hour-ish long podcast. They're not the most consistent with their schedule, but that doesn't bother me as much because it's still pretty frequent. You know, they don't normally go more than a week. It's usually less than a week between episodes, but it's not going to be too overwhelming if you can't squeeze in too many podcasts throughout the week. So definitely one to check out. Again, it's called The Stuff You Should Know Podcast, and we'll, of course, have a link to that in the show notes, or just grab it on iTunes or wherever it is that you get your podcast.
That's cool. That's not a show that I listen to.
It's fun. You should check it out. I'm always looking for podcasts that'll teach me things that I don't know about. So that's a fun one.
I like that.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for our podcast. Hopefully you learned a few things from us tonight. And if you'd like to get a hold of us and talk to us about maybe some things you've learned, you can do that by reaching out to us on Twitter. If you want to do it in as close to real time as possible. Richard's Twitter account is at Richard Gunther. Mine is at Josh Pollard. And the website is just at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook too, facebook.com/TheDMZ. So you can go over there and like us if you're on Facebook. If you're on Google Plus, we're there also, along with the Windows Media Center community that we've got set up over there. You can email us. That old reliable method still works too, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And of course, you should check out some of our other podcasts, like The End User from Chris and Taylor, covering tech news from the end user perspective. They've missed a couple of episodes, partly because Taylor had some technology issues. His laptop blew up the last time they tried to record. So hopefully they'll get their technology issues under control so they can report on them for you. And the other show we've got going on here at the DMZ is Richard's other show. It's called Home On, covering the latest home automation and control news. What's going on with the latest on Home On?
I need to get my life under control so that I can get the episode that I teased last week out into the feed. And that is the episode with Seth Johnson, where we are catching up on news. I have also recorded with Rahul Raj, the VP of marketing for Ecobee. And we had a great discussion about their product, which I'm a big fan of. So I think that's going to be an interesting show too. Both of those should be out within the next 2 weeks. And then we are coming up to episode 50. Kind of hard to believe.
Whoa. Hope you'll get a good guest for that one.
Yeah, some guy named Josh. He's been on a couple times.
I said a good guest. All right. Well, if you'd like to talk to us in what might be my favorite way to talk with you is to come and listen to the show live, because we record this typically on Tuesday nights around 8 p.m. Eastern, and we've got a live chat room. You can hear us record this as we're doing it and chat along with us. So always lots of fun conversation in the chat room. And the schedule isn't always perfect, but if you follow us on Twitter, you'll know for sure when we're going to be recording. But typically Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. If you can't listen live, all of these shows are available as podcast. And if you're listening to them as podcast, then we'd appreciate it if you'd head on over to iTunes or Zune or Stitcher or TuneIn, wherever it is that you're getting it, and leave us a rating or a review. We very much appreciate that. But that's going to do it for episode 330. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next week for episode 331. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.